I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Carrie Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to This Day in History class. Today is March 24th, 2019, and we have another special guest on the podcast today. That special guest is Annie Reese, who is the host of Stuff Mom Never Told You, a really amazing feminist podcast, and the co-host of Savor, where she talks about all things food, and she visits really cool cities to explore their food culture. Right, Annie?
Yes, yes. And I'm so thrilled to be here with you, Eves. Eves, you've been on Stuff Mom Never Told You with me. We always have a great conversation.
Yes, we do. And I'm really looking forward to our conversation today, which is about the Women's Olympiad, which started on March 24th, 1921, right?
Yes, that is correct. So, yeah, we're talking about French feminist Alice Milliat and her Women's World Games, which took place from 1921 to 1934 and led to the Olympics, letting women compete in more events.
That's a really big deal, isn't it?
Yes. I almost wrote, like, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of why I think this is such a big deal, and I will kind of end on that note.
Okay.
But I tried to, you know, shave it down so that people won't get tired of my soliloquies.
Well, this is what you do. You talk about women's history all the time and what's going on today with women. But tell me a little bit about what the Olympiad actually was, what happened during the Olympiad.
Sure. And before we get into it, just a quick disclaimer. There are a lot of acronyms in this.
Okay.
So bear with me.
You are the acronym queen.
That's what they call me.
This is knowledge, common knowledge. So
yes, it is. It's like on a plaque on my desk. The Women's World Games were Alice Milliat's response to the International Olympic Committees, or the IOC, and the International Association of Athletics Federation, the IAAF, their disdain and fear of first-wave feminist gaining ground and of women wanting to compete in certain events like the 800-meter track event. This one was particularly controversial. Events that did not recognize women or had been deemed unfit for women.
Mm-hmm.
So some context. At this time, people, and particularly here we're talking about Europeans, were already having conversations about gender equality. The term feminism is thought to have been coined in the 1880s by a French activist by the name of Hubertine Auclair. Around the same time, Baron Pierre de Coubertin, who was also French, founded the modern iteration of the Olympics and of the IOC. De Coubertin outright opposed women's participation in sports, and this bled over into what events he believed women could and should compete in when it came to the Olympic Games. So the 1900 Games were the first that allowed women to compete at all in tennis and golf, nothing else.
Okay.
Yep. over the years, they did add things like women's swimming, but track and field events were pretty much non-existent for female competitors. And if you're asking, why track and field? The answer is lost to time. Some physicians thought women exerting themselves to the point of visible sweat was unhealthy for women. So maybe it's that. It was definitely, in either case, viewed as unladylike to sweat in public and possibly bad for your uterus. Although I have to say, I have built up quite a sweat playing tennis.
That was going to be my question.
Right?
Like, why do they think you can't sweat when you're doing certain sports if they both take levels of physical exertion?
Right. Well, one interesting thing, and this is just me wondering if it had something to do with this, but the tennis uniform for women at this time was essentially covering all of your skin, so maybe they just couldn't see you sweat. I don't know.
Classic trickery. What you can't see doesn't exist.
It was like a weighted down skirt. It did not look comfortable for playing in the hot weather. But anyway, the first French women's athletic club, Femina Sport, which was founded in 1911, put together France's very first women's national championship for track and field in 1917. That same year, some of Femina Sport's founders created the Fédération de Société Féminine Sportive de France, or Women's Sports Federation of France. And this is when Alice Milliat enters the picture. She was one of the founders of this organization. She formally requested that women's track and field be added to the Olympics in 1991. That's when she put in the request, was turned down. So what does she do? She decides to host her own Olympics, pretty much.
Okay.
The first step was founding the ISFI, and on March 24th of 1921, that organization hosts the inaugural Women's Olympiad in Monte Carlo, and it's complete with 11 track and field events, 5 different nations represented. It was meant to show the IOC, hey, look, we can do this, and persuade them, kind of a proof of concept. You should add these categories to the Olympics. And despite the fact that this event was a success, the IOC rejected their appeal. But that did not stop Milliat. The following year, the ISFI took it up a notch and hosted the first Women's Olympic Games with the idea of following the same 4-year schedule. I love this. It's like, we'll have our own Olympics then. We don't need you.
And I like how they already planned for the 4 years. We know this is happening.
Right.
We're going for this. We're staying committed to it.
Exactly. I mean, it was essentially the Olympics, but for women. And the first one took place in Paris. Once again, 5 nations, including the United States, participated, and it was attended by around 20,000 spectators.
Wow.
Guess who did not like this?
Who?
De Coubertin, the IOC, and the IAAF.
I would imagine.
Yes, they were not happy. They decreed that the IAAF should be in charge of all track and field events. This was a grab for control over who is allowed to compete and over who can use the Olympic brand. They didn't want this other organization coming in and using Olympic in the name. After these two organizations agreed that, yes, the IOC and the IAAF should each govern women's track and field events, so they acknowledged it was a thing. Women's track and field, it exists. They also immediately agreed that women would not have the right to appear in track and field events in the 1924 Olympics. So they got control and then shut it down.
Wow. Talk about a reversal.
Yeah. As part of this whole thing, the ISFI, which is what Milliat was associated with, did strike the Olympic from their name. They renamed their event the Women's World Games to get the IOC off their backs. The show went on, though, and 4 years later, the second Women's World Games, set in Sweden, drew athletes from 9 countries. And the IOC was furious and wanted to shut it down even more. So That organization, the IOC, attempted a compromise and added 5 women's track and field events in their 1928 Olympic Games. And this is compared to 22 events that men could compete in, by the way. Milia was not satisfied with this compromise, although some other members in the ISFI were. The British women's team was on Milia's side and boycotted the 1928 Olympic Games altogether. And even though these 5 events being added to track and field in the Olympics, in these games, it was historic, a lot of the press at the time did not report on it that way. Take this quote from the New York Times. The final of the women's 800-meter run, in which Frau Lina Radke of Germany set a world's record, plainly demonstrated that even this distance makes too great a call on feminine strength. At the finish, 6 out of the 9 runners were completely exhausted and fell headlong on the ground. Several had to be carried off the track. The little American girl, Miss Florence McDonald, who made a gallant try but was outclassed, was in a half faint for several minutes, while even the sturdy Miss Hitomi of Japan, who finished 2nd, needed attention before she was able to leave the field.
And that's real?
Yes.
You know, it almost seems comical.
It does, because so many words in there, I could go into why they're problematic.
For some reason, the word sturdy stood out to me.
Yes, you've got sturdy,
what
you've
sturdy
got
mean?
Little.
Is she a table?
I know.
But yeah, just the language that's used is just so obviously biased in that quote.
Yeah, and demeaning.
Yeah.
Women's participation in the 800-meter run in particular, like I mentioned, seemed to be controversial, and the IOC prohibited women from competing in this event again until 1960. The 1932 Olympic Games only allowed women to compete in the 100-meter dash, so short distance compared to these longer treks. The 1930s Women's World Games, on the other hand, featured 12 track and field events and competitors from 17 different countries. 1934's Women's World Games were even bigger, with 19 countries competing in 13 track and field events. With the success of these games, Milia demanded the 1936 Olympics include what she called a full program of women's events, or make the Olympics for male competitors only, because the ISFI was doing just fine, thank you very much. She twisted the IAAF's arm, and they eventually conceded to a 9-event program at the Olympics and to acknowledge the records set at the Women's World Games. The upcoming 1938 Women's World Games became the European Athletics Championship, so changed the name. Milia died in 1957, but she did live to see women in France get the right to vote in 1944. And so, yeah, that's kind of the story of this lost event that led the way to women being allowed to compete in more events in the Olympics.
It's so interesting because they kept working for it. So you saw those little moments of progress every single step of the way when something was given, something was taken, and that compromise and negotiation that was happening. So you mentioned earlier you were excited to talk about why this event was important.
Yes, as promised. So in light of Women's History Month, this whole thing was a huge push for women's equality. These were women who did not take no for an answer, who made their own games where they could compete, where people weren't telling them what they could and couldn't do. And they were successful enough so that the IOC had to listen to them. Think of all the amazing, strong athletes that we have seen and the records that these athletes have broken, the feats they've accomplished, the girls that they have inspired. I'm a runner, and I'm competitive, and I missed my Olympics window. I mean, there's still time, but I think I missed
never
it.
Never say never, Annie.
Yes, thank you, Eves. But if I had grown up not seeing women compete in track and field at the Olympics, there is no way that that would not have impacted me and what I thought I could accomplish. That's a huge deal. I would have imposed limits on myself, and I would say probably a lot of young girls and women would have. When I run, I feel powerful and strong and confident, and I owe some of that freedom of thinking that I can do this, to the women before me who fought for that chance to compete. But all of that inspirational, I hope, stuff aside, I have to say, if you're curious, the Olympics are still not 50-50.
Okay.
For instance, the 1500-meter freestyle swim event wasn't available to women at the 2016 Rio Olympics, even though Katie Ledecky has broken two world records in that event. Men didn't have the 800 meter, so it doesn't make a lot of sense. So all this to say, there is still work to be done. This really is an ongoing conversation. And we can also talk about it in terms of non-binary and trans folks, which, yeah, this is all in the news right now. So if you think like what we're talking about is not important to the conversations we're having today around the Olympics and what sports people can and cannot compete in, according to organizations,
shadowy cabal of people.
Exactly. It definitely is important, and I think it's really valuable to remember this and to keep pushing.
Well, I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it today. Olympics often seem to be a hotbed of social conversations, just as a nature of all the different types of people who are involved in it. And this little slice of history about the Women's Olympiad, I think, is a thing that a lot of people may not know about. And I really appreciate you bringing this to our audience's attention today. I had no idea there was that huge background to the Women's Olympiad and that it really caused that much change. So, yeah, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure as always.
Come back soon.
I will.
Keep up with us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at TDIHC Podcast. Thank you for joining me today. See you same place, same time tomorrow.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.